Do you want to know what's really fun about being a woman?
This is starting to sound like a Shania Twain song.
Man, I feel like I'm in perimenopause. Ugh, the brain fog, the mood swings, the night sweats, the unpredictable cycles. Many women enter perimenopause and they don't even realize what's happening to their body, and it's directly impacting how they're making major life decisions.
You get divorce strategy on this podcast, but when it comes to strategy for what's happening inside your body, our friends at Natural Cycles are here to help. Their new app mode, NC Perimenopause, within the Natural Cycles app interprets those hormonal shifts with data and science.
So I'm currently using the app and the intel is fascinating. It doesn't just track symptoms. It helps me see patterns and it helps me connect the dots between my hormones, my symptoms, and my lifestyle. It even estimates what stage of perimenopause I'm in. I love that it helps me better understand what's going on with my body and why I have days where it's more difficult to make decisions than others. And that clarity really matters. You can even download a personalized report that you can bring to your doctor, which makes those appointments way more productive.
Natural Cycles is a female-founded digital health company that analyzes biomarker data to help users better understand their cycles. NC Perimenopause is for anyone experiencing or anyone who thinks they may be experiencing perimenopause, from the first hormone-related changes to your cycle or symptoms all the way until menopause, when your periods stop. Learn more and give it a shot right alongside Andrea.
Yes, let's do this thing together. You are not alone in your divorce or this transition. There are tools to help you make sense of what your body is doing. Visit naturalcycles.com and use code DIVORCE. Or tap the link in the show notes to learn more about how you can save on a subscription.
The problem is that the term shark already denotes that this is going to be a battle. And as soon as we go into battle, who wins? The lawyers win, the clients lose. There's no battle that gets won where the clients actually win.
If you're going through a divorce or thinking about getting a divorce, this is the podcast for you. Hosted by Morgan Stogsdill, the head of family law at the largest family law firm in the country, and comedian Andrea Rappaport, you're going to laugh, you're going to learn, you're going to avoid major divorce mistakes. This is How Not to Suck at Divorce. You hear us talk literally all the time about getting the right tools and the right team together for your divorce.
One of the tools we want you to know about is SoberLink. It's an alcohol monitoring device that's used in many cases where there's a concern for kids' safety during parenting time because of alcohol use.
You don't need me to tell you how stressful it is worrying about your kids when they're not with you. SoberLink provides real-time testing and facial recognition and so many other helpful features. Ask your attorney to get this on board in your case and visit soberlink.com/notsuck for a special offer for only our listeners. So on this episode of How Not to Suck at Divorce, you're going to hear divorce advice from attorneys who charge well over $1,000 an hour and serve the celebrity community and the very, 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 very wealthy people of Los Angeles and surrounding areas.
Not to mention that you're going to hear from private judges that also handle celebrity cases, which is going to be fantastic. So we just got back a few days ago from LA, where we were asked to MC the Stand for Justice Gala supporting Levitt Quinn, which is a really cool nonprofit organization that actually offers legal representation in family law and divorce and also adoption cases for low-income families in LA County. In addition to that, Andrea and I also had a lot of business meetings that we handled for the podcast, and it was our first time traveling together, and we're still standing.
Yeah, we survived the girls' trip. I survived. And I have to say, let's just not bury the lead here. We had a great time. Like, we had fun. So, okay, you're going to hear all about this conversation with the attorneys and judges. We're getting to it, we promise. But first, I got to take a minute and just give you guys all of the dirt of what happened behind the scenes on our LA adventure, because there was some stuff. Okay, let me start with the flight. First of all, shout out United Airlines. We love you. Obsessed. I am obsessed with the United Club at O'Hare and LAX, so please always let me in. And the flight attendants, on our flight to LA, because we flew to LA together, we flew home separately, but our flight attendants on the flight from Chicago to LA were so amazing. They went above and beyond. They even took pictures and a video with one of our brand new pieces of merchandise, which is our You Got This and We Got You baseball caps, which I am, if you haven't checked it out yet, go to the website and check it out. We're so proud of them. But the flight attendants were so cool.
They were, and they were wearing them, and then they were going, you've got this, we've got you, we'll have to launch those videos soon. It was just fabulous, so shout out to them. But yes, our flight was amazing, but then the amazing train kind of came to a screeching halt when we checked into our hotel. Look, I'm not going to talk about the hotel name at all because we don't want to hurt anyone or even this hotel, but we have to tell you about this mess that we walked into. So we get there. We're very excited. It's late afternoon. We go to check in and the lady is like so confused. She cannot find our reservation. So Andrea and I are standing there and we're like, what do you mean you can't find our reservation? We have two rooms. It's like late afternoon. We've been traveling all day. What's going on? So we stood there for like a good probably 15 minutes, just kind of like looking at the ceiling. We're, you know, not starting out the best way. Finally, they're like, oh, good news. We found your reservations.
Good news.
You are staying here. And they're like, but Andrea's room isn't ready. Morgan's room is ready. So at this point, we're like, okay, we just want to get a shower, get to dinner. It's not even like morning time. So I don't know why our rooms weren't ready. It was like late afternoon.
And we're still, can we just say for a minute, though, how laissez-faire the whole feel was? Like, it wasn't like, oh, your room's not ready. Oh, we can't find your reservation. We'll get right on it. It was sort of like, yeah, we can't find it. Sorry.
Yeah, they're like, that's your problem. Yeah. So then they're like, okay, Morgan's room is ready. So Andrew and I look at each other. We're like, remember, I mean, we've never traveled together. We really, you know, get along great. We do this business together. We do the podcast together, but we've never been together. So we don't know how each other travels. So, you know, when you're traveling with someone, you're not completely familiar with how they travel. Like, no one's going to say, God, this is weird, or like start this fire. Right. So we're saying nothing. We're like, okay, let's go to my room. Let's drop off our bags. Let's figure out what we can do next steps. So they're like, oh yeah, your room is up this like ginormous hill. So you're going to have to get all your crap into this hotel car and get up this hill. So at this point, we're like, okay, cool. Put all of our stuff. And remember, like, we're coming to BMC. So we have so much podcast stuff. We have probably four huge bags ourselves trying to get it into the car. We get it up the hill.
Or they said you could walk. Remember that part? They said you could take a car or you guys could just walk.
This is not just like any hill. Like, I'm talking straight uphill to another building. A mountain. Yes. LA mountain. So the guy drops us off with all of our stuff at the top of this hill and literally says, your room is on floor 2, and goodbye, and like drives away. And so we're like, is this? So I turned to Andrea. I was like, is this for real? She's like, it seems that way. I'm like, okay. So we start dragging our stuff. And I mean, dragging. The suitcases were the size of us, dragging it to the door. The funniest thing was trying to get through the door because I couldn't hold the door and then help Andrea get her suitcase through because we kept getting stuck. We couldn't get the suitcases up. So we finally get up to the second floor. And at this point, we're like sweating the whole thing. And I swipe the key card to get into my room, to put all of our stuff in my room. I whip the door open and I'm like, oh my God. Oh my God. And Andrea's like, what? She can't see into the room. She's like, what? What's the problem? I'm like, Andrea, I'm like, this is someone else's room. And she's like, what? And I'm like, there's crap everywhere. We're in someone else's room. She's like, no, 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 no. I'm like, oh my gosh. So I shut the door and we're just kind of like looking at each other at this point. And I'm like, now I'm getting mad. So I'm like, you know what, Andrea? And I'm not ready to cry uncle yet because I don't know how she's feeling.
But I was.
And so I'm like, you know what? You sit here because there's no way we're going to drag these four bags down the hill. And I'm like, I'm going to go handle this. And she's like, okay. So she's not saying anything at this point. I'm like stomping down this hill. And of course, I get to the front desk. And now I've got a gentleman at the front desk. And now what is he wearing? None other than customer service N95 mask at the front desk. Uh-huh. Straight up N95 mask. And he's the customer service guy. And I'm like, excuse me, there is someone in our room and he is talking and I'm saying, I don't even know what you're saying because you have an N95 mask on.
Like talking to Charlie Brown's parents.
Exactly. So at this point, all of a sudden I'm about to launch on this guy and my phone buzzes and I look down and it's Andrea. And all of her texts, the only thing it says is, I hate this place.
I hate it here.
And my response was, thanks for saying that. Me too. We're leaving. And so I told the guy, I was like, we're out of here. I don't know what kind of place you're running here. I'm in someone else's room. And, but you know, the crazy part was, Andrea, you said it right on the head. Like it was the laissez-faire attitude. Even when they let me into someone else's room, I mean, I said to him, I was like, do you guys care about safety in this hotel? I'm a nice person. I'm not going to go through this person's room, but what if this person was like in the bed or whatever? I don't even know. Gross.
And they were just like, oh, yeah, we gave, oh, okay, right. Because the people we thought were checking out weren't checking out. Okay, sorry. So it was so bad. And like, this was not like, I mean, this was not a room at a Red Roof Inn. This was like a nice, as we thought, nice hotel, not cheap, like a good stay, you know, whatever. Okay. But now we get to the good part. The hero of our tale. I started feverishly looking online for places that we could immediately get into. And in comes the clouds parted, the sun shone down, and we were introduced to the SLS in Beverly Hills. They're a Marriott property.
Where would we go but Beverly Hills?
Where do you go when you're in trouble? Look none other than to Beverly Hills. So here come the shout outs. Shout out Cooper on the phone, who got us the reservation. Shout out Gio, who checked us in and made all of our dreams come true. And shout out, major shout out to Kaylee, who made our stay so freaking comfortable and memorable. These people, I mean, listen, not all heroes wear capes. They wear Marriott Bonvoy pins. Marriott Bonvoy, you can use that line if you want. But I mean, they were so amazingly kind. I mean, we came into this place like freaking refugees. I mean, we were like, can you guys please be nice to us and give us a room that's like our room and not someone else's room? And please don't tell me there are any mountains or hills involved because we've just hiked the Swiss Alps, like the Von Trapp family, like climb every mountain, like give us a place. They were so amazing. The only downside for me was that Morgan got a bigger room than I did because her husband has more Marriott points, but whatever.
Okay, I might have more status, but you're the one with the celebrity shout out. Don't forget that.
Okay, yes, this didn't happen in LA, but right before we left for LA, you guys, Khloe Kardashian liked one of my Instagram posts. So there's that.
That's right. It was, I mean, I feel like now you're basically one with LA, one with the celebrities.
Yeah, I am. I am basically amongst the celeb crowd, minus all the face work and fillers. Well, I have had some face work, but no fillers. But can we talk for a second? You're already laughing. Can we? Fillers? You guys, people of Los Angeles, people of Beverly Hills, I should say, guys, slow down on those fillers. Can we talk about all the bad fillers and faces we saw?
It was like a train wreck, absolutely out of control. And I was shocked because I thought most people would want to come to LA to get those kind of services because you see some fabulous work coming out of there. But I will tell you, it was like train wreck city. And I couldn't stop looking at every dinner we were at. I was just staring. And then I thought to myself, God, you're being rude. And then I thought to myself, no, you're not. Look at these people's faces. They are asking you to stare because this is how bad it is.
It was like a body of a 70-year-old with the face of a 30-year-old that didn't match. Like Mr. Potato Head.
Well, that's it. And it wasn't like a good 30-year-old. It was like really pulled, but very, very full. That's why when you said Potato Head, it was exactly right. It looked like Mr. Potato Head. And the males with the plastic surgery, wow.
Oh, yeah, the guys. I mean, we swore that we saw Wayne Newton's mixed with Barry Manilow several times. I don't think that it was, but that's what it looked like. Okay, enough about the trip. Let's get to this conversation, the reason why everybody clicked onto this episode. Really quickly, major thank you to our friends at Our Family Wizard for making this trip happen for us. Big thank you to Anna Story at Levitt Quinn, and big thank you to our amazing friend of the show, Carrie Pines, because we would not be here today if it weren't for all of you. Well, friends, as promised, I have to just say, this is such a wildly exciting conversation for us, Morgan. I mean, are you dying?
Dying.
I'm dying.
And also really hot because there's lights on us for once. We're usually recording in my son's closet.
Yeah.
And today we're all fancy and I've got these sweaty lights on us.
There's sweaty lights on us. I am pouring out of the side of my dress. I am like, this is such a scene. But you know what? When in LA, you do as, what did we learn it's called today?
Angelinos.
The Angelinos do. Friends, we are sitting here with the very best of the very best when it comes to family law in Los Angeles. So I hope that you are ready to hear what the celebrity attorneys and celebrity judges want you to know about divorce. We're going to introduce this panel. Y'all ready? Okay. Sitting over here to my right, we have attorney to the stars, and I think he's a star himself. Just ask him. Mr. Chris Melcher. Take it away, Morgan.
Okay. And to my left, we have the beautiful Commissioner Gretchen Taylor, Her Honor, who is drinking a virgin margarita. Never seen one of those before, but she looks fabulous and her lipstick is on point.
Gorgeous. Okay. Next to the Honorable Gretchen Taylor, we have the Honorable, bringing her back again, folks, Diana Gold Saltman. We are obsessed with her. And Diana, what are you drinking tonight?
I am drinking nothing, Andrea.
Okay, well, way to make it awkward right from the top. Okay. And at the far end, he is already shaking in his cowboy boots. And yes, there's going to be a question about the boots in just a minute. We have another celebrity attorney to the stars, Mr. Steve Mandel.
Thank you, thank you, thank you.
Okay, guys, this episode's going to feel a little bit like a game show, okay? We're going to throw some questions your way. Whoever has the answer first, just speak up. And if you guys get out of line and I have to reprimand you twice, we're going to end the game and then we're going to go a different way, okay? You ready?
Sounds.
Okay, the first question I have, actually, I'm going to go ahead and turn my direction over to Chris for this one because you're an attorney. Chris, why is it so important that somebody hires the right attorney for their case as opposed to just hiring the first attorney they interview?
Well, if we're going to move this case forward, we've got the two parties and we've also got the two attorneys. So there's four people that have to be reasonable. Mm-hmm. What are the chances of that? And so what happens, though, instead of people going out and hiring somebody who's reasonable, they hire somebody who identifies with themselves. They pick lawyers like they pick a dog. So if they're super aggressive, they hire somebody super aggressive.
Woof.
And if they're just like efficient, they're going to hire somebody hopefully like myself, who's very efficient and reasonable. And the problem then is all we're doing is matching this good or bad behavior by the client with now a representative and throwing them into the mix.
Mind is blown.
Yeah.
I would hire Chris.
I would hire, like, what? Steve got up and left.
Steve's out. Steve's out.
No, but like, that makes so much sense. I have never heard anyone frame it up like that.
Not to mention liken it to a dog.
Yeah, I know. I feel like I'd be like the golden retrievers of, I'm like, oh, no, he looks nice to me. But why? Why do you think that? Is it because we're just drawn to people who make us feel comfortable? And when you're hiring a divorce attorney, you don't want to necessarily feel comfortable like that?
Yeah, it's a lack of sophistication. Most of these people have never hired a lawyer unless they're on the in-spouse business side, business owner side. They dealt with lawyers a lot, you know, and they're maybe used to being challenged. Most of them are just hiring somebody who, again, kind of represents literally what they're feeling. And if they're upset and they feel cheated and they want to fight, they want to hire a fighter. Uh-huh. And the code words are, are you aggressive? I want a shark. I want a pit bull. So these are all things that tell me I'm not the right person for you. And again, it's what we're trying to do is be efficient. We're trying to resolve the case, hopefully through settlement, but if not in court, and just hiring a cheerleader mm-hmm. is not going to do that. We need a leader.
Okay. I like that. Steve, you're up.
So I think the thing that I always look for when my clients always ask us, so if we're the first one that gets hired, the very first thing they say is, well, who should the other side hire? You know, we get asked all the time for referrals. And I always tell them a really smart, really good attorney, because two smart, good attorneys get things done. The ball moves down the field. They don't hold things up. They move the ball and people get their matters resolved.
Why should somebody not hire a shark?
The problem is that the term shark already denotes that this is going to be a battle. And as soon as we go into battle, who wins? The lawyers win, the clients lose. There is no battle that gets won where the clients actually win.
Well, that's because they're spending so much money, right?
They're spending so much money. They're destroying their family. They're destroying their relationships. The true cost of a divorce isn't the money that you pay to the other side. It's the loss of your friends. It's the loss of your community. You don't just lose your spouse. You lose half of your life.
So it's funny you mentioned that. So you guys don't know this yet, but one of the things that we do on our show is we direct people to different services that we offer to help people get through this process better. And the number one product that we sell is called our Divorce Crash Course. The biggest part of that course is step-by-step guide on how to hire the right attorney. Because we saw time and time again, you know, people are in a state of panic, right? They're like, I got to do something. They meet somebody on the street, you know, on a bus, and they're like, you're an attorney? Okay, fine. Here's the retainer. Let's go. And they have no idea. And they don't even know. Let's say they do hire or interview multiple people. They don't know what to ask them and they don't know what to look for. So what I want to know from the two judges in the room, in your opinion, when somebody is interviewing an attorney, what should they be looking for as far as getting that feeling of, is this person going to be the right fit for me?
Well, it's a spokesperson for yourself for the other side, right? So you got to sort of put yourself in the position of like buying a great pair of shoes, right? How does it feel? Is it appropriate for the occasion, right? Or a driver, you golf guys, right? You try it out. And so people just don't interview enough lawyers to begin with. They usually get sent a name or somebody says, this is your person. And so the first thing I would say is give yourself the opportunity to select. Have a beauty pageant of divorce lawyers and see who really fits the role you want to present to your beloved that you're saying goodbye to.
I love that you said beauty pageant. We always talk about that, at least at my firm, where we know when we're in the beauty pageant, which means this client's coming in. They've already told us they have two or three other meetings on the books. So we're in the beauty pageant and we want to win it. So what do you've got, Judge?
But I think that there's another piece to that. On the one hand, I think it's really important to find an attorney who is empathetic, who you feel comfortable with, because you're not going to disclose the things you need to disclose, the good, the bad, and the ugly, with somebody you don't feel comfortable with. But I also think that the best attorney is somebody who pushes back against you, who doesn't just tell you what you want to hear. And if somebody doesn't push back against you at the first meeting, probably not going to serve you well.
We talk about that all the time. That what you just said is the hardest pill for people to swallow, because, and I'm the one who is not, I've been through a divorce. I'm not an attorney. When you are already feeling threatened, right? You want a friend.
You want someone to pet you on the head and say, oh, it's okay, Andrea. I'm sure I'm going to fight that you can keep your pony and your unicorn in the pool house. And you're right. He's a dick. We're going to have him killed, right? You don't want someone to look at you and say, sorry, Andrea, that expectation of yours is unrealistic.
But what we talk about all the time is you don't want a yes man,
right?
You do not want a yes man. A yes man that if you go into that first meeting and everything you say, just like you said, Your Honor, is yes, that's perfect. What you're saying, I can get that. I can deliver. That is somebody you should be running from.
So what I want you all to do, listeners, I need you to take a breath. You got to think right now. You know, Judge Taylor just mentioned that we should treat it like, you know, we'll go shopping for shoes. The hard thing is that shopping for shoes is fun. Shopping for an attorney fucking sucks. You're not getting, you know, like that's not fun. Like I'll try on a bunch of shoes. I can do that all day. But shopping for an attorney where you're already scared and you feel threatened and you feel like there's so much on the table to lose, it doesn't feel relaxed. So guys, this is where you have to take your time. And if you're feeling overwhelmed, you don't stop the process. You just take a breath.
So I have a question for the two.
The other thing you have to remember, too, is good attorneys charge you for that first meeting. And so
Absolutely.
Many times clients will come to me and they'll say, because I'll tell them, maybe you want to get a second opinion because I can tell they're kind of iffy about everything. And I tell them, go take a second opinion. Oh, yeah, but they're going to charge me $1,000, too. And you're like, yeah, that's going to be the least expensive $1,000 you've ever spent in your entire life.
Money well spent. Let me just tell you that. Okay, so I'm lobbing a few questions to these beautiful judges here. So I understand in LA and actually in California, you can not only hire your own private judge, but then also you can hire your own private mediator. Where I practice in Chicago, we can hire our own mediators and we can also go to arbitration, which is kind of similar to hiring your own private judge, although it's not as prevalent as it is here. So my question is for you, if a client is going down the road of mediation or the client is going down the road of a private judge, what should they be looking for when they're hiring that person?
Well, it depends on what the issues are that are extant. If your issues are custody, you look for somebody who has a background in custody. And we are an open book, so our CVs are, you know, right on our websites. If you're looking for somebody with experience with business valuations, then you go in that direction. And you also probably want somebody who, I think the attorneys are the ones that really select them, who has the demeanor that's going to work with that family. Because unless there's buy-in, particularly in mediation, doesn't matter how brilliant or how much experience the judge has, if there's not buy-in, it's not going to work.
I want to ask some rapid-fire questions in terms of mistakes, because this is how we really get people's attention. It's great to tell people what to do, but I feel like there's something the way that we're all wired. We want to know what to not do. Okay. So let's talk about the biggest mistakes you have seen. Let's go in different categories. Here's where when you have an answer, just shout it out. Okay. The biggest financial mistakes you've seen. Go.
Oh, has to be. Oh, well, I trust the other side. I'm not going to file. I'm not going to hire an attorney yet. We're going to work on this. That's the biggest mistake I hear.
Oh, shots fired by Steve Mandel.
I would say the biggest mistake is don't get a forensic accountant. I have a perfectly fine accountant right here who's been with me right in the business for 20 years.
Okay, tell me more. Give me why there.
Somebody who is in the business has a stake in the outcome. Mm-hmm. And so they're not going to be neutral in assessing a lot about the value of the business. A forensic accountant would certainly consult with in-house accountants, but the in-house accountant is not the neutral accountant.
Mm-hmm. And I just want to say just about forensic accountants. Friends, if you are concerned about some funny money stuff going on, before you just pick up the phone and call a forensic accountant yourself, have a conversation with your attorney. If your attorney does not think that you need a forensic accountant, then you might not need a forensic accountant.
And we've done a fabulous episode on forensic accounting and when you need it and when you don't. So go back in our episodes, look up that episode. But I want to shift over to Your Honor. What about you? What do you think?
Well, I think that there are an awful lot of couples who are able to have good conversations with each other long before some of these other outcomes tend to be the way to go. I personally mediate couples without lawyers in the room. And they're generally speaking already intelligently aware of their various, let's say, asset questions. They are bound together by children that they're really concerned about. And, you know, even if you're going to go out and hire a lawyer, sit down together and discuss it if you possibly can. If it isn't the War of the Roses, it just doesn't have to be such a bad experience.
So one of the things that I see in my practice all the time that just makes me cringe so much is when one person has access to all the financials and they are telling the other spouse, don't worry about it. I did the balance sheet. We're good. My business documents, you can come to the business and you can look at anything you want. I'm an open book. Right then and there, red flags are going off in my head. Do you guys feel me on that?
Well, I don't know. See, that's the approach that I use. But I mean, but honestly, though, because when we find these people, their relationship is broken. And how do we make a deal when it's broken? And to get to your question about what's this mistake, it's lying and threats. We have a lot of people, if you take me to court, if you hire a lawyer, if you don't do this, there's going to be a consequence.
Yes.
Then it's like, okay, now I can't trust you. I need to hire a lawyer. Or they lie about what the extent of their income and assets are. So I think like being the open book, but honestly, but not as a device, but just saying, how are we going to rebuild enough communication, respect, and trust so that we can make a deal in a broken relationship?
Chris and I would say it's trust with confirmation.
I am 100% on board with that.
Trust with confirmation, folks. Okay, Chris, something that you said brings me to my next question. Well, and a straw from my cocktail fell out. Thanks, girl.
I got it.
Hey, there's always something around here. Okay, talking about trusting people, talking about feeling like maybe somebody's pulling a fast one on you. Let's talk about negotiating, because something that's really popular right now when we're divorcing, we are very quick to put people in a bucket, right? I can't talk to her. She has borderline personality disorder. I will not deal with him. He's a, shall we all say it together on the count of three?
Narcissist.
Every motherfucker is a narcissist, right? They're not. I'm sorry. Some guys are just assholes. And maybe we need to go back to that, right?
And women.
And women. Yes. Thank you. Are you calling me out on that?
Yes, sorry.
I feel like you looked at me.
I did.
I am an asshole. Okay. But no, how can we guide people to negotiate with someone whom they do not want to negotiate with because they have all these ideas in their head? What do we think? What's the mistake they make?
Judge Gold Saltman is chomping.
I know. I see her. She's ready to go.
What's the alternative? I mean, this is the person you're getting a divorce from. You don't have another choice. Your other choice is let somebody else make the decision. Either you keep it between you and you come up with a decision that you can both live with, or some stranger is going to decide for you.
Well, research says that the person who makes the first offer, generally speaking, gets the better deal. And most people don't want to make the first offer. They're, oh, I'm going to show them my cards and they're going to take advantage of me. But if you really look empirically and scientifically, the person who makes the first offer sets the bar.
Wow. Do you agree with that, Chris?
Yeah, I think that's a leadership principle, because we have a plan. We worked it. We're going to prepare. And then we're going to set kind of the universe of this thing.
Yeah.
And rather than just saying, wait for somebody else to do something when they're not prepared to do it at all. And so what I'm doing is, you know, for a negotiation, you're going to bring people to this metaphorical or maybe real table and settle. But we have to set that table first. And Steve is a consummate host, very, very good at entertaining. And he would.
Secret love between Steve and Chris.
Well, they're
absolutely. It's a romance.
They're absolutely.
Love circle.
He's been a mentor of mine and I admire him a lot, but he is a great cook and a great host. And he would know and tell you, like, you don't just start feeding people stuff, you have to invite them and you have to prepare for them and you have to set that table. It's the same thing for negotiation.
On the other side of a case.
We have.
Are you like, I love you? No, I'm.
Oh, no. When we're on the other side of a case, it's not so much I love you. It's like, okay, you think that these stock options have this value? Prove it.
You're like, meet me in the hallway for a hug, though, okay?
Yeah. And then, but then afterwards, you go out and you get a scotch.
Yeah. Love it. Yeah. We have to be able to fight. But when I'm hearing the client saying, you know, my husband is borderline or narcissistic and is a cheat and is a horrible person, I'll listen to that. And then I'll just say, how do you see this going? How do you see this turning out? And then that forces them to then start engaging with the problem solving part of their brain and saying, well, okay, realistically, this is how it's probably going to roll.
I think you're right, because if you are stuck, what I see with my clients, if you're stuck in fear and you're stuck in anger, there's no way that you can actually wrap your mind around making a business deal. And so what I see is either clients are just completely not engaged, which is really problematic because we might be at the point in their case where we're actually negotiating. So as attorneys, good attorneys, we're trying to take you out of the fear, take you out of the anger, and actually get you to think of it like a business deal.
Yeah.
Which is the hardest thing to do.
Yeah.
It's very hard to take emotionally charged people and say, okay, now I need you to make a very smart decision.
Well, one thing we've got here with our two judges, the nice part about them is they weren't district attorneys before they became family law judges. They were family law lawyers like Chris and me, and then they became family law judges. And the one thing that I will tell you is the following. When I go into mediation, you have to look at the psychology of your client. If your client is angry, they're going to demand more. If your client is guilty, they're going to give more. And so the ideal situation is your client's angry and the other side's guilty. That's when you score the best.
What do you do with anger versus anger?
Well, that's when we make money. That's when Chris and I order our new car.
And that's all the time we have tonight, you guys. Yeah. Thanks so much for being here. Okay, I want to shift for a moment because this is one of the most important topics when it comes to divorce. And full disclosure, this is my least favorite thing to talk about because I have yet to get through an episode of our show and talk about kids and not cry. So brace myself here. What are some of the biggest mistakes that we see when it comes to children?
Not thinking about the kids. You know, the whole thing gets going and even the court system. And unfortunately, I think ourselves and our peers, we give this lip service to something called best interests. But really, it's two different parents who are just fighting over their idea of what their kid should be. And the kid kind of gets lost in the middle. Divorce court really doesn't support children going through divorce. It's a footnote. And that would be nice if we could change that and turn it around.
How can we change it? What can we do differently? As parents, as professionals, what do we do?
I would say, and California actually has a statute that allows this, address the custody issues first and finally. I think the worst outcomes for children are when the divorce keeps going and there's no finality to it. And so there's no, you know, the break point after which we can heal. The longer that goes on, the more pain it is. And I think that social science research tells us that the more acrimony there is between parents, regardless of, nobody cares whether you get an extra Saturday or Tuesday. It doesn't right. matter when your kids are grown. What they'll look back on is, how much did my parents insulate me from whatever was going on between them?
Anything to add to that, Chris?
I'm a financial guy. I don't do custody.
I saw him just kind of sink in his seat the minute you said that.
His eyes glazed over. Well, like, oh, shit, kids.
Well, when it comes to alienating behaviors of parents, part of the thing has to be education to the parents. Like, people don't understand it. The classic example is dad gets tickets to a Dodger game. It's not dad's custodial time on Tuesday night. So instead of dad picking up the phone and calling mom, what does dad do? Dad asks little Johnny, hey, I've got dugout tickets to the Dodgers tonight. Go ask your mom. And it starts out with something as small as that. And then it ends up with, your mom is the worst human being on the face of the earth. All she wants is money. Or your dad is the cheapest SOB that walks the face of the earth. He never gives you any money. If you want money, if you need a new pair of shoes, ask your dad. Right. That's the worst. That's right. When it's denigrated to its bottom
line. It is impressive, though, that these small little issues that if you just got ahead of it and communicated better, they start to snowball. Just like he's saying, they start to snowball to a point where you cannot look back. And then guess what happens for our listeners? That is when you are paying unbelievable amounts of money to your attorney. There's kind of a point of no return. Don't get there.
Arguing over a Dodgers game.
Yes.
Because that's what happens. And I think the challenge is, Steve, that in mom's eyes, mom doesn't know, well, did he intentionally get tickets on a Tuesday when he knows that it's my parenting time just to mess with us? Or did he just happen to get tickets and it happened to be a Tuesday, right? And I think that's the problem. And I'll tell you guys, listeners, I'm the one, you guys listen to the show and you hear all of the mistakes that I made when I went through this. I was that mom. I was that mom who in the beginning I took everything personally. Oh my God, why does he want this? And oh my God, and what's happening? And yeah, he kind of was a dick. So most of it wasn't my fault. But the laughter could have been just a little bit louder there. But in the end, when you get the fuck over it and you realize if your kid gets to go to a Dodgers game.
In the dugout.
Let him go to the game. What does it really matter? I think the challenge is when you start seeing things becoming a pattern.
Yeah,
right?
And the demanding behavior and that kind of thing. The right move would be, obviously, like you said, call mom, ask for it. But then also be a stand-up person and be like, hey, I realize I'm taking your day. Would you like one of mine in the next week?
Swap a day. And I'll tell you, for everyone listening who's thinking, yes, nice for you to say blah, 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 I will tell you guys, I am six years out, something like that. It does get better. I never, ever thought that I would be saying this right now. You all know this. I left a very abusive marriage. I had a horrible divorce. I am now at the point where we are communicating and saying, hey, I'm going to take my kid to the moon next week. Is that fine? I'm like, the moon, you're so cheap, but that's fine. But yes, and let's trade another day to make up for it. So guys, it does get better. And I mean, as you said before, Your Honor, it is so hard to put the kids first, but that is exactly what we have to do.
I'm going to take exception to what you said. It doesn't get better. You made it better.
Yeah. Thank you. And I think you are absolutely right. It doesn't just, it's not just poof. Oh, it's the day on the calendar where it gets better. We calm down and we're able to think and not be so reactive. And that's when it gets better. That's when it becomes better for everybody. Okay. Last category when it comes to mistakes. Talking about the ex. What are mistakes that people make in just general communication?
I had a guy who took a knife to all four of his wife's tires while she was at the beauty parlor.
How are you going to get home with good hair?
Some people just behave badly.
Are there no boundaries ever? The beauty salon?
All four tires. Wow.
All four tires.
That's
he felt that was a communication of distaste, you know, but and that's mild. That's mild. I had another situation where they sent dog poo in FedEx boxes.
That's a classic move.
There you go.
That's a classic move. Yeah. What have you seen, Diana?
I've seen many, many things. And I've seen it happen in front of me where a clear communication. Do you want Tuesday? Yes, thank you. I'll take Tuesday. You can take Wednesday. That could have been the conversation. But in fact is, so you're going to take Tuesday, jerk?
Just that little add-in.
So I tend to recommend people use the Biff method.
Love Biff.
Love Bill Eddy. And I have no financial stake in anything he writes, but it's a very effective communication style. And I encourage attorneys to drill it with their clients so that it becomes second nature.
So if you're not familiar with what Her Honor is just talking about, she is talking about the fabulous Bill Eddy, who is a friend of our podcast. He's been on the podcast numerous times talking about how to actually communicate with your ex in a good way to bring down the tone. All right. What do you got for us, Steve?
Okay. So let's talk about AI.
Oh, all right.
Best thing that's happened to family law is AI. If you tell AI, tone this down, a judge is going to read this, somebody important is going to read this, and it tones it down.
Make me look nice.
Yes, make me look intelligent. Make me look nice. give me a complete sentence, right? And AI has been great. And, you know, our big programs that we have, our Family Wizard has an AI component to it now. And it tones people down. It's dumbfounding how good it is.
We are obsessed with the tone meter on our Family Wizard. It saves so much conflict and it's so easy to use. Our Family Wizard in general, I think, you know, speaking of people who have a challenge communicating with their soon-to-be ex, it is such a lifesaver and such a money saver. People don't realize it. People see it and they're like, oh, I got to pay for one more thing, but they don't realize the money that they are not going to spend by going into extra mediation and litigation over stupid stuff. Question about AI and chat, GPT, because you seem like an AI kind of guy. What is the last thing that you used ChatGPT for?
Oh, probably to write a speech. Like, you know, we're always, Chris and I are always speaking somewhere. And so you throw your speech in there and say, hey, you know, rewrite this for this group or something like that. It's always great for that.
Chris, what's the last thing you used your chat for?
So helping create an itinerary for a trip, and you can upload all your reservations and it'll put this whole thing together for you. So there's a lot of beneficial uses for it. I think with the communications, it's become easily detectable now. You know, the message, it sounds like you're upset, and here are three things that I can do for you that will calm you down. And it's just so fake that I think people need to really make it their own.
All right. So we need to dovetail into probably the last segment, because there's a cocktail hour in this gala going on right out this
door. And I'm getting so thirsty.
And we're so sweaty. Okay. So we have this amazing panel of judges and lawyers that are all celebrity judges and lawyers, and myself included, have represented celebrities. Let's give the people listening some juice, right? So tell us about having celebrities before you, or if you've represented celebrities, what makes them a little bit different or unique? And if you have any funny stories, obviously leave the names out. No one wants to get sued today.
I mean, obviously everyone's a person here. Okay. But the difference,
the
difference is that we have celebrities who have a lot of handlers and they're not used to like dealing with real life normal problems. And here we have to have these communications directly with them. And they're not used to being told like that they're wrong, anyone challenging them. So they live in this bubble and they're very fragile. So I think that that is something that they have to become accustomed to like saying we're actually accountable and people are going to, I'm going to tell you that you're wrong because I don't care. But I think that that is one thing that they need to learn. What we can learn from celebrities is modeling their good behavior on divorce. You usually don't hear about celebrity cases other than the split happening and the conscious uncoupling message that soon follows. We don't see a lot of litigated celeb cases. They're smart enough to handle this to protect their brand. We can learn from that.
Okay. One of the judges weigh in here. You guys have had celebrities and you also have handled it quietly where nobody knows it's happening. And then they break up. And everyone in the public's like, oh my God, they broke up. And you're like, yeah, that's been like 2 years ago.
Well, the big category that is, I don't know that you'd call it a celebrity divorce, is the highly paid athlete who keeps making babies. And those are a very large component of our business, unfortunately. Despite training, apparently, in the locker room, an awful lot of people who don't have much experience with their $80 million contract now have someone who is a dependent, who has needs, who wants special treatment, limousines to take the baby here and there. And the challenge is really letting the person know that this is just not going to go their way.
I think the problem or the difficulty with celebrity divorces is the difficulty with being a celebrity in any case. You're under a microscope. You can't just mess up like normal parents do. You can't just make a mistake because it's going to be in the news. I think that's, while people say, oh, what a terrible problem, you know, they have so much money. Money is not their problem, but not having privacy is huge, and it's a big one for their kids. So I appreciate those who make a concerted effort to keep their kids out of the limelight so that whatever they're going through does not become their kids' issue and growing into adulthood.
What do you think, Steve? Give us some juice.
Well, I'll just, you know, everything that's been said so far is pretty much your daily life. We can't make up the stories of the people that come either before the courts or before Chris and I in our offices. Okay. So my favorite celebrity kind of stupid story is this one where two older celebrities, they're like in their 70s. The wife comes in, she meets with me, and she tells me that she's getting divorced and she wants a divorce from her husband. And I'm like, okay, well, why? I mean, you guys have lots of money. You've got lots of houses. You could just live in Tudor. Because he got taken advantage of. And I'm like, oh, okay, tell me what happened. Well, you know, he has this dominatrix. And I was like, oh, were you aware of the dominatrix?
And it just
yes, I was aware of the dominatrix. Well, so then why is this a problem for you? And she says, well, we had an agreement that he would only spend $50,000 with her, and he spent last year $150,000. So we have to get divorced.
Got to draw the line somewhere. I do not blame her.
Well, and I'm $150,000 richer for that. Just kidding. I wish. Love that story. Never thought we would close a show with a dominatrix. But hey, there is a first time for everything. You guys, thank you so much for sitting here with us and giving us part of your cocktail hour time, sharing this wisdom with our listeners, because everything that you just shared is so incredibly valuable.
Well, thank you.
Thank you.
Well, that's a conversation you don't get to hear every day. You don't get to hear from a room like this every single day. I just want you all to know it. And it might be hard for listeners who aren't, you know, weren't physically there with us to really like value all those brains in one space. But you guys, that was a lot of brains and a lot of money sitting there telling you what you should be doing and what you shouldn't be doing. So I want to recap because it was a ton of information. One of the most important things, and if you remember, I told Chris Melcher, who said this, that he had literally blown my mind. You don't want to hire an attorney who reminds you of you. You're not looking for a friend. You don't want to hire, I think the phrase he used, someone who's likable to you, which means if you're super aggressive and you fly off the handle, your attorney should not be like that. Vice versa. If you just want someone like me, like I think I joke that I'm like a golden retriever, you want someone who's going to be a little bit more assertive, looks at things with a discerning eye. I mean, Morgan, what went through your mind when he said that?
Well, it's so true. It is true. It's a different way to think about it. And I think it really kind of goes to what we always say and what I said on the podcast is a yes man is not who you want. And sometimes when you pick the person that is your similar person, you might be getting a yes man, a yes woman. And that's not the point. The point is to hire someone that's going to get you through the process with dignity, with the most money in your pocket, with the best results. So I think that that was his point, and I totally agree. And I just want to make one other point. This group of people were absolutely, in my opinion, fantastic. I had never met them before, except for obviously our lovely judge who we had on one time prior. But as a divorce lawyer and as a high-end divorce lawyer, I can sniff out high-end divorce lawyers and high-end judges in a second. These are the creme de la creme. And the best part about it is that our listeners are getting their advice for free. And these people charge more money than probably most of the country for divorce lawyers, and you're getting the advice for free. So listen to it and take it into consideration. Okay, Andrea, what's the next takeaway?
The next takeaway that sticks out is what the Honorable Gretchen Taylor said about don't rush through this process. I mean, she and I joked about, you know, she likened it to buying shoes. And I'm like, well, buying shoes is fun. Shopping for an attorney sucks. But don't rush through it. And this goes for even individuals who might need to be switching attorneys. You know, if you're feeling like you don't have the right fit, we talk about it all the time. Go and talk to other people, but slow down. We always feel like we're in a rush, right? We always feel like we got to pull the trigger. We have to make a change immediately. you don't have to do anything immediately.
We kind of joked about it being a beauty pageant, which was kind of what divorce lawyers always call it when people are shopping around for other divorce lawyers and we know it. But one thing about beauty pageants and kind of our joking about it is any good divorce lawyer should not be selling you to come to them. Okay. If someone's selling you or putting on the hard sell, number one, gross. Number two, run. Because really good divorce lawyers, just like we talked about on our last episode, they have really busy books of business. And yes, would they like you as a client if you're a good fit? Yeah, of course. That'd be great. But are they going to be hurt if you're not their client? No. So if someone's selling you because they need to sell you, that is a big red flag.
Huge. Oh my God, we just had like a Pretty Woman moment. Big, big mistake. Huge. Oh my God. Okay. The next thing that's sticking out to me is the Honorable Diana Gold-Saltman, whom we love, we love. We were talking about communication and how things can be made easy or things can be made really hard. And one of the biggest mistakes that people make is just adding a little tag at the end of a comment, right? No problem versus no problem, jerk. No problem, asshole. That little asshole comment can cost you so much money. Why? Because it's like gun boom. Now you're off to the races. Now you just annoyed somebody. Now you don't know what they're going to throw your way. Maybe they were going to let something go that you did that really annoyed them. But now that you called them a jerk or an asshole, guess what? All bets are off. So don't do it. Use our family wizard to help you. The last thing that I want to mention, which I really loved, we're talking about kids. Steve Mundell brought up a great example. If one co-parent has tickets to a Dodgers game and it's not on your parenting day, okay? Number one, the communication should never go through the child. It goes through the parents. Number two, if it's not your parenting day, and this is not a pattern, it's not a habit, but if the other parent has an option to take the kid on a really good experience, fucking let the kid go. What are you doing? Let them go to a Dodger game. Now, if it's becoming a pattern and you're noticing that things are happening again and again and again, and they're not on your parenting days, and maybe the parent isn't asking you, they're telling you, or they're going through the kids, then you have an issue. But when you bring this issue up to your attorney to address, you need to be very clear. This is not about me not wanting the child to have these experiences. It's about the way these experiences are being communicated. Because when that information goes before a judge, you will look like the good, caring parent, not like a parent who's acting like a baby and playing the tit for tat war.
Also, on that point, one of the things that I said, which I think makes a lot of sense, that kind of dovetailed on what Steve was talking about was, listen, if it continues to be an issue and you're like, well, okay, now it's the Dodgers and tomorrow it's the concert of the year that you got tickets for, it's not unreasonable for you to respond and say, sure, I want Johnny to be able to go with you, but this is taking one of my days. Are you able to swap a day for next week? Something like that, so that it's super reasonable. You're trying to accommodate. And if a judge or anybody looks at those messages, they're going to think, yeah, Brenda, which we always talk about Chad and Brenda on this podcast, Brenda, you're being really reasonable right now. Chad should be jumping at the fact that we should swap a day because Chad's getting to take Johnny to the Taylor Swift concert.
Absolutely right. It's the communication, and be clear about what you want. We all want what's best for the kids, but sometimes we do get a little stuck in the animosity that's brewing between the two divorcing individuals. Okay, friends, there's going to be direct links in our show notes to everything that we talked about in this episode. One thing that we just sort of coyly mentioned, Chad and Brenda, I have to tell you guys, on this trip, Morgan and I exchanged little gifts. Morgan gave me the cutest personalized embroidered sweatshirt that said Brenda to Morgan's matching Chad. And if you didn't see the pictures on our social media, we'll repost them. But Chad and Brenda were alive and well in Beverly Hills. Oh, and Morgan, tell everybody about the bracelet.
Oh, yes. Andrea actually came with a really cute gift bag in addition to all of the under eye, you know, mask that she brought. She brought me an amazing bracelet that is so beautiful. And it basically, in her mind, references the fact of how hard we've worked on the podcast and that we are keeping this going because we have so many listeners, such a great community, and we love hosting this podcast.
We do. And it's a link bracelet that has little like diamonds encrusted on it. And I thought about this and I'm like, you know what? Morgan and I are linked together in this, or in this for the long haul, but also we see our show as a missing link for all of you. For everybody who's navigating something really challenging and it feels like something's just not coming together, well, let our show be that missing link that helps keep you stronger, keep you together, and get you through this process. Maybe it's a stretch of an analogy. I don't know. It was the best that I could do. But
I don't know. I think divorce is a marathon. It's not a sprint. We say that in every show. Some days are going to be okay days. Some days are going to really suck. And some days it's going to be hour by hour, you are hanging on. And guess what? That is okay, because it will get better. And that's what we want you to remember.
That's right. We're here for you every single day of this process. The good days, the bad days, the really bad days. Please share our show with a friend, anyone you think who can benefit from listening to How Not to Suck at Divorce. Leave us a review, leave us a rating. They really, really help us. Join our private community. Send us a message. We do our very best to respond to every single message we get. And remember, friends, even when you feel like you can't do this anymore, we promise that you can, because you have got this.
And we, my friends, have got you.
The How Not to Suck at Divorce podcast cannot be copied or rebroadcast without consent. This podcast does not contain legal advice. The information contained herein and provided on the podcast and the resources available are not intended and shall not be construed as legal advice.